Hello, and thanks for tuning in to Stuff We've Seen. If you are a first-time listener, just as a reminder, if you like what you hear, please tell a friend. And don't forget to subscribe to our show on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, TuneIn, or wherever you get your podcast fix. You can also find us on the web at StuffWe'veSeen.com, on Instagram at StuffWe'seenPodcast, or Twitter at Stuff_VE. Now, get ready for those two lovable fellows, Jim and Teal, and their discussion of latest and greatest and old films as well. This is Stuff We've Seen.
J. Frank Parnell. You ever feel as if your mind had started to erode?
Yeah.
Ever been to Utah?
Sir, I represent the Helping Hand Acceptance Corporation.
Radiation. Yes, indeed. You hear the most outrageous lies about it. Half-baked gogglebox do-gooders telling everybody it's bad for you. Pernicious nonsense. Everybody could stand 100 chest x-rays a year. They ought to have two. When they canceled the project, it almost did me in. One day my mind was a little burst. The next day, nothing swept away. I'll show them. I had a lobotomy in the end.
Lobotomy? Isn't that for loonies?
Not at all. A friend of mine had one. Designer of the neutron bomb. You ever hear of the neutron bomb? Destroys people. Leaves buildings standing. Fits in a suitcase. So small, no one knows it's there till blammo! Eyes melt, skin explodes, everybody dead. What's so immoral working on a thing can drive you mad? That's what happened to this friend of mine. So he had a lobotomy. Now he's well again.
Hello, and welcome back to Stuff We've Seen. This is Jim. And now, here he is, the new Federal Election Commission Chairman, Teal. Hey, how's it going, buddy?
I got to say, there's nothing like being hired for a job and then having it shut down immediately.
Oh, I thought you were the replacement shut down. Well, that's okay. I'm pretty sure there'll be no shenanigans with the election results next year, so you don't really need to do anything.
No, there isn't much to do. Everything's on the up and up. I trust everyone. So good, clean election. No hitting below the belt.
Super. Well, that's great because now we can just get back to the movies, which is
exactly
what we're here to talk about.
Yeah.
That show is, after all, called Stuff We've Seen.
Yeah. Exactly. It's not, although it's not movies we've seen. It's stuff.
No, it's stuff. Yeah. And this, if any episode was indicative of that phrase, stuff we've seen, I think it's going to be this episode because we're just going to talk a lot about stuff that we've seen in recent weeks and perhaps the past month. And I don't know about you, but I haven't been to the movie theater in several weeks because there hasn't been really anything to see. So everything I'm going to talk about today, I've seen at home.
At home. Yeah. No, the last time I saw a movie in the theater, I think, was Once Upon a Time in Hollywood.
That was the same for me. I went and saw it in the 70mm, which we talked about last episode. And but I've been busy, by the way, watching things in my home television device with the streaming services.
Yes.
I'm gonna rattle off a few things. I don't think they're necessarily worth talking, but I'm gonna mention those, and then you're gonna tell me about a film that you watched and made me watch. So we've seen it both. So a couple of things. We're just gonna get them right out of the way. Operation Finale. It is a film that came out last year, and it's about the extraction, we'll call it, of former Nazi Adolf Eichmann, who was the architect of the Final Solution.
Right.
And he was spending his glory days in Argentina, a haven for ex-Nazis back in the day. And he is discovered and uncovered, and the Mossad from Israel basically went in and kidnapped him and got him on an airplane back to stand trial in Israel. It's a true story. And of course, that means eventually they're going to make a exciting caper movie starring Oscar Isaac.
Is this Argo's fault?
I think so. And you know what? Here's the problem. I'm glad you mentioned that, because after Argo, which when people saw it, they were taken in by the intensity and this awesome ending, super climax.
Yeah.
And then you discover that most of that movie didn't really happen, or to the degree that it happened in the movie.
Exactly.
And this is, of course, Hollywood's been doing this for years, but like everything that needs to evolve and change, today, those types of movies, they feel like, oh, this couldn't happen in real life. And you can easily go on the internet and read the real story and discover that it didn't, which years ago, you didn't have that. So
you didn't have Wikipedia right there ready to go in the theater, in fact.
So I think that's a big problem that Hollywood's faced with these types of movies, is you're constantly comparing it to, well, what happened in the real events.
Yeah.
And that's why a movie like Once Upon a Time in Hollywood that really plays with the truth, it actually feels more real and realistic than a movie that's pretending to be real, like Operation Finale.
So does Argo sort of has a comedic tone, or at least a sort of hyped up dramatic tone? It's not really treated with realism, right? Like there's jokes in it. And is this movie like that, or do they try to play it real?
This is a strict drama, and you know what? I found it somewhat interesting. The only thing is I knew the story, and it was pretty obvious that they were trying to build suspense, so there's a parallel story going on about the Nazis that hung out with Adolf Eichmann working with the police in Argentina to try to find him before Mossad gets him out, because they couldn't just get him out right away.
Right.
And in real life, that didn't happen. Like the police, there was nobody that was going to help hunt for Adolf Eichmann. And even though it took a week to get him out, it was pretty not routine. There was no big suspenseful moment. So when these suspenseful moments, parallel cross-cutting action happen in the movie, you don't buy it. So anyways, that's it. You know, it's out there. If you're really into one of those sort of history caper films, it's a passable movie. And you can watch it.
I would recommend, instead of this movie...
I like that.
something that it's probably a little hard to track down. It's called Hotel Terminus.
The Klaus Barbie documentary?
Yes, the Klaus Barbie documentary.
Yeah, that is hard to... And it's 3.5 hours, but it's hard to...
No, it's 4.5.
I'm sorry. Excuse me. What's an hour between friends? I haven't seen that in a long time, and they don't really run it too often, but it's amazing.
Well, and also, I mean, it's a guy, Marcel Ofels, who directed it, actually goes to Argentina and knocks on Nazis' doors and is like, I know you, you're a Nazi.
Yeah, and he has this amazing amazing interrogation style.
Yes.
He disarms the Nazis with his charm and talking, and he gets them to basically sit down and confess their crimes.
Exactly. And so if you're interested in Nazi hunting.
Real Nazi hunting.
Real Nazi hunting, not this Hollywoodization of it. That's a pretty cool movie.
Yes, I agree. We see these aren't even turning into quick hits anymore. But,
Keep them coming.
Northern Soul. Okay. This, I think we watched it on Prime. We just was scanning through, seeing what was available, and we read the description. It sounded interesting. And what this movie is sort of in the vein of those musical films that we talked about many
episodes
ago.
Right, the rock and roll movies.
The rock and roll. It talks about a sort of slice of life in Northern England in the 70s that I didn't know much about, and it was the Northern Soul Movement, where right before punk came into play, these kids who were experimenting with speed and kind of feeling like outcasts, they started to listen to obscure soul music that they were getting as imports at different record shops and shows. And it's soul music mostly like from Detroit, stuff that wasn't even popular necessarily here in America unless it was on the soul charts. But one key ingredient was it had a very fast beat. It was usually 100 beats per minute songs.
Oh, wow.
And it talks about that whole subculture, and it kind of uses the vehicle of one kid who was an outcast, and he kind of gets involved in the Northern Soul scene and a lot of ups and downs. But the music is great. And afterwards, my wife tracked down the soundtrack on Apple iTunes. And there's like 40 awesome Northern Soul inspired songs that you can get. And so even though it wasn't the greatest movie, it did offer me kind of a little bit of music history that I wasn't aware of. And I liked it.
Okay, but it's not it's not Argo, right? I mean, do they do a whole
No. None of this is supposed to be like real people. It's maybe inspired by somebody's past or something, but it's, it's just a little story. It's kind of like Sing Street in that it's inspired by the guy's, youth, but it's not a real story.
Okay. So it's about getting caught up in a music movement and a time and a place. And
Now, all right, and I got one more.
Yeah.
And then we're going to move into the main crux of the program and start talking about some, films that we want to spend some time with.
Okay.
Okay. Again, sometimes late at night as you're going to sleep, you just want something to watch.
Yes.
And so my wife and I will pick a movie. It might take us a few goings, but we want something that's stupid, simple, and maybe is going to put us to sleep, and we'll eventually finish it. And I found one.
Something you don't have to focus on too much. You don't have to put... Yeah.
It did sound funny. It was called High School USA.
Oh, okay.
All right. And I'm mentioning this to you because of the childhood you had was much different than the childhood I had. And in that, you didn't watch television and I watched way too much television.
Right.
And so a lot of times there were these made-for-television movies that would come on. And I'd get really excited about it because the network that you watched all the time, like ABC, would promote this. And it would feature a lot of the television stars that you were familiar with. So it was exciting. And, of course, this came out in 1983. So I was, 13, and I wasn't quite in high school yet. But anything that, purported to be high school, I was interested.
Right. Yeah, it's exciting. You're looking forward to that time when you're...
Yeah, when it was like, this is going to be what high school is, so I'm going to watch High School USA, because this is what high school in the USA is probably going to be like. So my dad would never watch any of this stuff, and you had the one TV, and it was whatever he wanted to watch. So we would always head off up the road to my grandmother's house, and I'd watch these things in her living room. And so I had vague memories that I had seen this, or I must have seen this, because there was no way this was going to pass me by when it was on TV.
Right.
And so my wife and I watched this thing. She had, she's like 5 years younger than me, so she didn't remember seeing this. This had the young, not quite the movie and television sensation yet, Michael J. Fox.
Okay.
And then there was another television actress, which since you didn't watch these shows, you wouldn't know who she was, but Nancy McKee, and she was in The Facts of Life. Todd Bridges and Dana Plato, both from Different Strokes, and then a whole host of other television actors.
I didn't watch a lot of those shows when I was younger, but I caught up with... I caught up a bit with Nick at Night.
Okay, so you're familiar. They had, Bob Denver, which is Gilligan. He's in it. Anthony Edwards, young Anthony Edwards.
Okay.
Young, and it's funny because later they would star a couple of years from this point in a box office smash, but Crispin Glover plays the wacky comic relief teenager.
Okay.
And so this
movie. It's quite a cast.
It is huge television cast.
Yeah.
And it's directed by a guy named Rod Amato, who he basically did nothing but television shows. You know, he was big into all these sitcoms and stuff over the years. This movie, single-handedly, is possibly the worst thing I've ever seen in my entire life that I've sat through and not walked out on. And at some point, I decided I would have to watch the whole thing so I could say I've seen the whole thing. There isn't going to be, you will not find an example of a worse movie than this.
Wow. Okay. And it's on
Prime? There's stuff that goes on in this movie that you can't believe it was made for TV for a young kid audience. There's a time where naturally Bob Denver, his son, is friends with Crispin Glover. And I can't even explain the stupid shenanigans that go on, but they destroy his precious brand new Firebird Trans Am.
Okay.
While he's away at the airport. So here's the solution so that they don't get like in trouble. They pick him up at the airport in some other car. And before he can leave, they get him really, really, really drunk. Right.
Okay.
And then the next shot after he's like drank so much, they show him in their front yard and they've positioned the Trans Am into a tree and they make it like, and then they
like
are
he
hanging
got drunk and crashed his own.
Yeah. And then it's lucky that he didn't kill them. And so this is how things were handled in a TV movie. And nobody's wearing seatbelts. But I couldn't believe it when they did this thing. I'm like, this is the most irresponsible thing I've ever seen. They're making light of a drunk driving accident.
Oh, man. Yeah.
When they make fun of blind people. There's
well,
a whole thing with
of course they do. It's 1983.
Anthony Edwards puts a T-bone steak in Michael J. Fox's backpack. And there's a blind teacher who has I know that
Molly Ringwald has kind of already done this or started it anyway, but I think the 80s are due for a reckoning.
Yes. We're going to have an 80s reckoning show.
We have to because, oh my God, these movies are politically incorrect, irresponsible.
As a capsule, if somebody is listening to this show and is younger and doesn't remember the 80s at all, and you want to get a good understanding of what someone like myself was subjected to on television, you got to watch High School USA on Amazon Prime, and your jaw will drop to the point where you might have to stitch it back into your head.
Now, looking at the page for it on Amazon, there is an African-American character.
Todd Bridges is in it.
Oh, Todd Bridges is in it.
He plays the smart nerd who has designed this computer, which is obviously a small person inside a suit. And it's the most ridiculous looking robot character ever. It makes Twiggy from Buck Rogers look like a real robot. But that was a big thing in the early 80s. They did that in like Rocky III had a robot.
Yep.
And then, you know, there was Buck Rogers. So everybody had to have a pet robot.
Right. And then, of course, there was Short Circuit, which just.
Oh, well, that's also in the inappropriate 80s column. That was a couple years later. Yes.
Oh, yes. It is in the inappropriate column.
Yeah, I'm writing notes of all the inappropriate movies. I think Soul Man, I'm just jotting that down right now.
Soul Man. See Thomas
Short
Howell.
Short Circuit, yes, where you're going to cast Fisher Stevens as an Indian scientist.
Just,
yep.
I mean, he thought that was a good idea.
Yeah. People didn't care. Oh, it's so funny.
Yeah, no, it's just, and can we just include, can we do a whole thing on how Hank Azaria is offensive?
Oh, wow. You're going to bring in the Apu.
Well, not all just right. that.
I know. Okay. We're going to have a lot of characters. So anyways, those are my quick hits.
I almost have to see this High School USA.
Well, that's why I threw this out there, because if people are curious, and I feel like you can learn things from crappy movies, right? And so maybe if there's a theme going on here is I have forced myself to watch things that aren't necessarily good and some of them that I knew wouldn't be good.
Right.
Because I feel that I get a new perspective and really appreciate a good movie after I've seen some really bad ones.
Yes. Yeah, well, that's true. But also there's sometimes little good things or interesting things in those movies that you can pull out and have.
Yeah, there wasn't anything interesting in High School USA.
No, there was. I mean, you've.
I'm leaving a lot of stuff off, though, by the way. There's a lot more in there.
I think the whole drunk driving thing is interesting. I think the whole inappropriate 80s thing is interesting. I think, you know, there's something, you got something of value out of watching this movie.
Oh, I did. Well, again, I got to see the worst movie I've ever sat from beginning to end. I'm calling it now.
That really makes me want to watch it.
You should. But what do you got for me?
Okay, so now I can't even remember how I came upon this movie, but I guess just flipping through Amazon Prime, and something about it just made me a little curious. I think it was the poster and the description. So, of course, I did what I always do. Is the movie I'm talking about is called Buzzard from 2015. And, I like Metacritic.
That's director Joel Petroikis, right?
Yes.
Yeah, see, I made it sound like I knew him. I don't know.
It is Joel Petroikis, yes.
He also co-stars in the movie.
He co-stars in the movie. He's made a few other movies, The Alchemist Cookbook. And most recently from this year, a movie called Relaxer, which I have not seen yet, but is his best reviewed movie, has an 82 on Metacritic. And Buzzard has a 77 on Metacritic, which is pretty good. So I decided to check it out, and it's got to be one of the lowest budget movies I've ever seen. It's shot what looks like just video, not great cinematography. There's maybe five actors in this entire movie. Really limited sets. Most of it is just this one main character. And this is a movie about sort of, he's not really a con man, but he's a temp at a bank or a mortgage office or something, making $10 an hour or whatever. And he runs all these little scams, like he orders office supplies from the office and then brings them to Staples and turns them in for cash. He, at one point, he cuts himself. I mean, he becomes obsessed with making a Freddy Krueger hand out of a Nintendo Power Glove.
This is true.
This was a really unique character that I hadn't seen before. And the central performance, the guy who plays him, there's something, I don't know, he's such an asshole.
This Joshua Burge is his name.
Yes, Joshua Burge. And the character is just awful. He is running all these scams. He's selfish. He's mean. There's one moment where he stays over at his friend's house because he gets evicted. And his friend wants to play video games with him. And he just says, no, I want to go to sleep, and kicks his friend out. And then as soon as his friend is gone, he turns on the thing and starts playing video games by himself.
I know. Yeah, he is really, but he is a jerk, but he's somehow compelling and interesting to watch.
He is fascinating to watch. And to me, that's most exemplified by this scene where it's one shot and it's several minutes long. I didn't type it.
He's eating the spaghetti.
He's eating a bowl of spaghetti and meatballs. And it's just one shot of him sitting there eating spaghetti.
Supposedly, they let the camera keep running because they couldn't believe he was just eating and eating and eating it. And they just thought it was great, so they kept it in.
Okay, because it is kind of great. There's something kind of, it's hard to take your eyes off this guy. It's such a weird performance, and it's such a weird character. And it's not a character, you know, here's a guy who's like a young white guy, college educated in America, and he's at the absolute not the absolute bottom. He's scraping along the bottom of capitalism.
Yeah, but he's working towards disaster. Like, almost unpurposely, he's upping the ante till things are just going to implode.
Exactly, yeah. He keeps pushing it and pushing it. And eventually, I guess it does kind of implode. But, you know, it's just so, like, the guy, there's something wrong with this character. Like, he's running this whole scam of trying to sign checks over to himself. And yes, at the end of the movie, he's trying to sign these checks over, and the guy's like, sees that it's a scam. And he's like, why are you doing this for $95 in checks?
Well, it does make a great case. The guy's mentally unbalanced.
He's mentally unbalanced, and he is, I think, almost, it is a psychological portrayal, but there's something of this guy. He's like a product of capitalism, and he's sort of lost any sense of morality and is just about working the system. And he's working it from the bottom, but there's plenty of other people working it from the top. This movie appealed to me in that, largely through the central performance, but also that it's kind of a political film. And I don't see a lot of movies about people struggling with their jobs. What was that movie? 2 days, three nights. Did you see that movie? I can't remember now, but
I did not.
I will dig up the title. I'm blanking on the title. But there aren't a lot of movies about people just struggling to get by. And
there used to be a kind of genre that British filmmakers used to make in the 60s. It was called the kitchen sink film.
Yes.
And they don't make those anymore. And they certainly don't make them in America. And yet you did get some films that I don't think they were kitchen sink films, but like in the 70s, you did have like with Cassavetes and, you know, like Ray Fulson's Five Easy Pieces, these movies that kind of focused on characters and trying to get through the American life.
Exactly.
I used to love, but there's no place for those movies anymore in theaters anyway. You don't see those very often.
Yeah, it's not. Yeah, it used to be a whole thing. And it, you're right. It isn't anymore. The sort of struggle. And so this is a political film in a way. It's about a character dealing with capitalism. And I don't. Yeah, the movie I was thinking about is called 2 Days, One Night with Marion Cotillard.
Yes, I know exactly what you're talking about. I never got to see it.
Okay.
Maybe I'll have to check and see if it's going to be on Criterion. That's one of those that might pop up.
That's where it might pop up. And it's great. It's about a woman who works in a factory, and all her coworkers get a raise, but she has to be fired for them to get the raise.
Right. She has to try to convince them not to take the raise.
Exactly. She's going around trying to convince them. But it's a similar sort of thing where it's like you're being sort of screwed over by the system and trying to work every little angle. There's a part in Buzzard where he cuts his hand trying to make the Freddy Krueger glove. And he doesn't have health insurance. And so he has to pretend to cut his hand on the paper cutter at work. So
that was a great scene.
It's a great scene, yeah. And
making this movie sound better than I thought it actually was, but it's true that it was. It kept me watching it throughout because it was so unique and bizarre.
It's so unique and bizarre. It's not a he cuts his hand, and then he goes to the doctor, and the doctor, of course, identifies immediately what's going on. Is that cuts a day old? You didn't cut that today. You don't have health insurance, do you? And it's like, when was the last time I saw a scene in a movie where somebody was dealing with not having health insurance, right? And that's like such a common thing that I see in people I know and that is going on in America. And I haven't seen it in a movie.
See, look at that. You're finding. See, and that, I guess this is sort of the point of where it's great to go on to these things like Amazon Prime. They always are looking for content. So they are picking up a lot of these films that were probably in festivals and not getting, you know, distribution deals. But they're these odd gems that you might have picked up at the video store in the late 80s, early 90s. And there's some merit. And that's where I think I appreciated it for that reason, is that it wasn't quite a bottle movie, but it had that sort of very low budget.
Yes.
Hey, what kind of story can we tell when we don't have sets and we don't have a lot of money? We can't put a lot of actors. And I feel that it was able to successfully tell a story in, you know, 90 minutes.
Yeah. And an interesting one that I haven't totally seen before. I think I would have really loved this movie if I'd found it in the cult section of the video store in the 80s.
Yeah. Well, maybe that's why, you know, maybe it's sort of a hidden gem, we'll call it, that you're labeling it a hidden gem.
I'm labeling it a hidden gem, although I got to say, I'm not going to, like, highly recommend this to a lot of people because it's a specific kind of movie and you got to be able to tolerate a really distasteful main character.
Yeah, well, this was one of those, we watched it late at night in chunks.
Yeah.
Just like I did with High School USA. Like, it's a good, you know, it's not going to win any awards, but it's... you know, it's something unique to think, you know, and I'd rather be talking about a film like this than some of, like, you know, like Spider-Man Far From Home.
Well, exactly. Yeah, I mean, this is a movie that does get you thinking a little bit. It shows you a point of view you don't necessarily see a lot in movies. And yeah, like I said, it gets you thinking. And that scene where he eats the spaghetti is just amazing. So, and then, I don't know, maybe I shouldn't spoil it, but the last shot of the movie is kind of interesting.
No, don't spoil that.
Okay, I won't spoil it.
No, I mean, if people are going to check it out, then, you know, give them some stuff to be interested in.
Yeah, so if you're into kind of weird cult movies, I would say check this out. And I need to mention also the other main performance in this is his friend, who is also the director.
Yes, Joel Petraeus.
And his performance is also really kind of strange and unique in a way.
He felt like he was out of Napoleon Dynamite or something.
It did, but it also felt really real to me in a way that Napoleon Dynamite, like, this guy is such a loser. He, like, is setting up a party space in his parents' basement.
But he thinks he's a winner.
He thinks he's a winner, but there was something, the character seemed really real to me. In a way that sometimes characters in movies feel like characters. They feel written, whereas this guy, and part of it is because of the way that scene works, is that it's sort of improv'd between the two of them.
Well, hey, Joel Petraeus, if you're out there listening, we got a fan, and maybe you want to come on and talk to him.
Please, come on the show, Joel Petraeus. yes, I want to talk to you. You have a fan. I will be watching Relaxer soon.
So, you know, on that vein, I kind of feel left out. I was like, you know, you're always, you won't watch these, you know, classic films that I tell you to watch, Roma, I'm looking at you, and yet you will find time for Buzzard. And so I was like, all right, I got to do that too. I got to go and I'm going to search on Amazon Prime for a film that I normally would not watch.
Yeah.
And I would overlook because I don't know it.
You're pulling a Teal.
Yeah, that Teal might watch. So I searched and I was like, I think I found something with an interesting premise and I'm going to watch it. Even if it's terrible, I'm going to watch it. And it was called Los Angeles Overnight. And it reminded me of Buzzard in the fact that it ticked off some of the same boxes. Very low budget, and it shot, like, you thought that Buzzard was the lowest budget looking film you've ever seen. This, I raise you with Los Angeles Overnight. I mean, there are shots where it's obviously shot on a video camera out of the window of a car, and you can see some of the dirt on the car window.
And okay.
Right? Yet in the same film, they have, like, clearly had some kind of money budget that they've got, like, crane shots and, you know, like the big, like, rising crane up into the sky, and then maybe some shots with a drone. And so it's like this weird mixed bag. And the director, I don't know who he is, but his name is Michael Chrysalakis.
Okay.
And it was written by this guy who also acts in the movie called, his name is Guy Jackson. And I feel that the script, if it had been worked on a little bit more, is much better than the executed film.
Oh, interesting. Okay.
Because it's an interesting story. But here's the thing. This guy must know some people. He has Peter Bogdanovich in the movie. And Bogdanovich probably would film for a day and plays a psychiatrist. Right. And then he has this character actress, Lynn Shay, is in it briefly. And then it's sprinkled with people you've never seen before. There's a lead actress who's very kind of intriguing. I think she does a lot of horror films that never see the light of day. Her name is Arielle Brackfield. She plays a struggling actress out in Los Angeles who moonlights as a waitress at, like, some weird diner where the owner of the diner makes all the waitresses, like, dress up like Jane Mansfield or something.
And
they wear blonde wigs. And she overhears some criminals talking in code, and she thinks that they're talking about a money score. And she teams up with this guy who must have a crush on her. He shows up at the cafe from time and again, and she convinces him to check out and solve the mystery. And they basically end up robbing these criminals. And the criminal story is very confusing. There's like several characters. I don't know what the hell's going on. But here's the weird thing. They're criminals that like want to like save prostitutes from a life on the streets or by like opening up like a shelter. And this other guy wants to open up a wilderness preserve. I'm not kidding. But then they act like thuggy gangsters. And this girl who's...
Yeah.
This girl's gone to the psychiatrist to get kind of motivational help in her life. She basically gets this money. And then because she has money, it's kind of like the American dream. She's able to do the things that a struggling actress needs to do in order to boost her profile, to get more auditions. And then she starts to get parts.
Interesting.
Meanwhile, the gangsters are closing in on her and her boyfriend. But then... Of course, as then her star starting to rise, she has less interest in the boyfriend.
Right.
Right. So there's this story going on. But then in the middle of it all, there's one scene that I've never seen in a movie before. There's a foot chase between a protagonist and one of the gangsters. And there's gangsters, there's some like violence that happens, and it's in a very low budget way. It's not very well done.
Right.
And again, it's not shot well and everything. But this foot chase, and it's through weird streets of Los Angeles, some of like the Hollywood Hills and things, and kind of unique locations. It basically ends with the person being chased basically like is basically runs out of energy to death. They have like almost like an asthmatic attack. Like you always wonder these chases, where do people get the energy? This movie gives you a chase where people are so exhausted from the chase.
That's pretty interesting. It sort of reminds me, I think you just watched this movie with Jeremy Renner and Elizabeth Olsen.
Oh, yeah. I forgot. I didn't even put that on my list of recent things. Wind River.
Wind River. And it reminds me of that, you know, the running until your lungs freeze kind of thing.
Yeah. And Wind River is a very interesting little film. And it's nice as it's not – there's only about as much plot as needed to solve the crime.
Yes.
And it's just wrapped up and – you know, we're used to these 2.5 hour movies. This thing is like maybe an hour and 45 minutes, maybe less. And it's just boom, bang, boom.
Yeah. It's I really liked that movie. It's who did it? It's the guy who did Hell or High Water, right? Who?
Yes. I think that he wrote Hell or High Water.
Yes.
He directed this and then he's directed Yellowstone.
Yes.
Which
correct.
Is TV miniseries.
Taylor Sheridan.
Yes.
Yeah.
I think Wind River was his first film.
I believe it was. Yes.
It's a good debut.
Really good debut, yeah.
Like it's a scenario where it's a slice of life, kind of like I would pair that in a weird way with The Rider.
I could see that, yeah.
It's different plots, but it's just like it's like this weird slice of America,
yes,
that you don't get to see, and these are very remote people, kind of living kind of an experience that's unlike what most people in America think the experience should be.
Yeah. Yeah, that's a good way to put it. It's interesting. And now I'm just like thinking about both Los Angeles Overnight and Buzzard sort of showing us these things that we don't really see in a lot of other movies.
Yeah, and I think the point is, and this is why I took your challenge, is that you might – these were not – I didn't think Los Angeles Overnight was a very good movie.
Right.
I can't really necessarily say I recommend it. But then you watch something like this and you see some promise – you see some interesting things, and in a little weird guilty pleasure way, I kind of enjoyed it.
Right. And yet exactly, because there's things that you're not going to see in your average Hollywood, I don't know, whatever kind of movie, thriller even.
Yeah. This movie, the director probably because they bit off more than they could chew. Whereas Buzzard, I feel like he had done enough films that he knew exactly what he could execute.
Right. And executed it fairly well within the confines of the budget and everything. But I think that's the other thing that's going on now is that somebody can make a movie like Buzzard on basically no money. And so it's opened things up. Like people have voice that didn't before because of budget restrictions, basically.
Yeah. I mean, in a weird way, creatively, a movie like Buzzard has inspired me more than a lot of other films that I would go and pay money to see in the theater. Like it inspires me to say, hey, you know, I could probably create an idea that could be done. And this has made me the, like a time in, film history where you could pull together an idea and it doesn't cost that much for the equipment.
Exactly. You can actually make something on a really low budget and there's outlets for people to see it.
True. If this, you know, if there's something worthwhile, and again, in that movie, I think what sells the film is that key performance.
Yes. Without that performance, there's no, but watching this character, watching this actor, I was transfixed by his performance.
Yeah. Joshua Burge. I mean, I think this is a guy who clearly he's just made movies pretty much with his buddy. Director co-worker, but
he has a small part in The Revenant.
Oh my God. Yes.
Yes.
You're right. And he may have been like, they may have seen him on these, mm-hmm. but I think this guy definitely, should be in more stuff.
Yes. And I think he will be.
Yeah. So stick with us. We'll make you a star.
Well, yeah. Stick with us. Come on the show. He should come on the show too.
Yeah. Cause I'm sure he's going to be listening.
Well, how many other podcasts are devoting this much time to Buzzard?
I don't know. We could be the first.
We could be the first. But, you know, I am going to recommend this movie to people as long as they know what they're getting into.
Well, I think we're recommending it right now. People, anyone who's listening is hearing about this Buzzard and it may even check 5 minutes out. And you know what? Honestly, that's a film, right? In the first 10 minutes, you either going to be in or out on that.
Yes.
Because he's right there in that first scene and he compelled me to watch and
yes.
keep watching. And I know my wife was a way bigger fan of the movie than I was.
Oh, wow. Okay. That's
interesting. She thought it was really cool. She liked his character, like in that weird, like you couldn't not watch him.
Yeah. And that opening scene is really just a shot of his face. And he's talking to a guy at a bank.
Yeah.
And it's such a great scene though. He's trying to close his account so that he can open a new account to get the $50 you get when you open a new account.
Yeah. By the way, I know some, I'm not going to mention them, but I know a person that hit those kind of scams. They look at it as like, well, I'm not being offered something and I'm being penalized because I'm an existing customer.
Exactly.
Never understanding that it's an offer to get new customers. And he wants to get that discount every time. And if he can pull it off, he will make that kind of move.
He will make that kind of move. And he's totally aware that he's being a complete scumbag about it. And
he doesn't care.
He doesn't care. They call him out on it. And he's like, yeah, I'm doing it because I can.
Yep. Okay, so now, because we still have some time in the program,
yeah.
You have not confessed here. You have not really seen that much stuff in the last. I've seen tons of stuff, but
I've been doing a lot of summer vacationing away from.
Well, you know what? We each got a film.
Yeah.
We each got a film, and that had been previously mentioned on the program.
Yeah.
And one was a film that you saw, but I didn't, so we couldn't talk about it. And then there was a film that I saw, but we didn't get too into it because you hadn't seen it.
Exactly. And now we're caught up with each other.
Yeah. So what do we want to talk about first? Do we want to talk about the one that I saw that you saw previously or the one that you saw that I saw previously?
Let's talk about John Wick first.
Let's talk about Johnny Wick.
I caught up with John Wick 3. I have seen the first two and enjoyed them. Initial impression, I like 3 better than 2.
I agree.
Not sure why exactly, but I was more engaged with it. I thought 1 was great. So if I was going to rank them, I would go 1-3-2.
And if I was to rank them, I would rank them 3-1-2.
Okay, interesting.
But I also didn't see the first one in the theater.
Right.
And I saw the second two in the theater, and there's just an energy in the third, and sort of this idea that it's now established a world and says,
right.
Yeah, you know what? We're way past the point where any of this should ever make sense. But it does in our world, and we're going to go with it. And it keeps introducing, like, I thought that it couldn't offer me anything new to its, like, sort of underground world of assassins. And yet it found, like, 5 new layers in this.
Oh, movie. Yeah. And I love the Adjudicator.
The Adjudicator is a great character. That's one of the other things, too. It's like, wow, it had the confidence to craft a brand new character that
yes.
introduces a whole level of the Assassin's Guild that we didn't know about.
Exactly.
And yet, without having to do, like, I don't think the Adjudicator actually has to kill anybody or anything.
No.
They're just, because of who they are, they introduce more menace.
yes.
than any other character that's like causing violence. And I found that fascinating.
Yes, because they're not threatening violence, the adjudicator. They're threatening the rules and violations of the rules and how the rules are applied. And I think that's kind of what's fascinating about John Wick. I mean, we're talking about is the world building and the sort of alternate reality it takes place in. But it's so rich and so detailed. But what happens is it changes the rules of an action movie in a way, because they're operating within their own rule set as opposed to dealing with the police or a terror, like you see in a usual action movie where it's the violence is in conflict with the real world.
Yes. Yeah, right. There's no cross-cutting with, like, a police department and a hard-boiled investigator trying exactly. to solve all of the violence and crime that's being left in the wake of John Wick.
Exactly. Yeah, no, it takes place in its self-contained world, and it's for a very unique kind of movie in that way, because every other movie, there's, like, threat to civilians.
This movie kind of takes place in its own multiverse. It's not...
It does. Yeah.
And yet the first movie, I kind of thought it was, you know, it was over-the-top action movie, but it felt to me that it was grounded in this is supposed to be our real world.
Right.
And then the second movie, we got further into this secret world, but it started to feel like, what's taking place right. here? But by this third movie, it didn't say, hey, you're on a new planet, but I felt like we were on something else.
Yeah, it's completely within its own world. And I think, you know, if you look at all three films in that way, you know, in the first one, he's out of that world at the beginning. Right. He's gone back to the real world. He's left that behind. He got out and he's slowly getting pulled deeper and deeper back into the world over the course of these three films. And so I think there's a narrative to that.
Well, again, stuff that I would fault most movies, I don't fault this. He, at the beginning, right, you know, he has that run in with the mafia thugs from
right.
the Russian mafia or whatever, and they come to his house and they beat him up. But
yeah.
it's because he left that world, he doesn't know how to defend himself in a way because he hasn't
right.
put himself back into the mental space. So usually you'd say, well, why couldn't he have fought back then? But it was like because he had left that space.
Exactly.
And then he could, and so it works. And of course, the first one, everything is new, right? And
right.
so, you know, this hotel and everything, that whole idea is new. And so that stuff is so much fun, especially if you're introducing anybody new to the show.
Right.
And then the second one, they do a few things that I thought were cool to enhance that world, like the tailor that makes the
right.
suit.
Yes.
But the story where he gets forced into having to make that hit, I think that's the stuff where we've seen that before, so it's not
exactly.
as interesting.
Yes, I've seen that story before.
But they fixed anything that was weak about the second movie right in the third movie. And then they
yes.
add Halle Berry, who she hasn't been that great in years.
But she's fantastic in this.
She's awesome. I want to see her again. Like, see, it makes me go, I actually want to see a fourth movie because I want more of her.
Yeah.
And I love the Angelica Houston part.
Yep, she's great.
And
yeah.
I want the adjudicator. I'm wondering, like, okay, I don't know how many more movies I want of this, but I want at least another one where I get to see maybe what's the final, you know, pillar, like who's that core
right.
group that runs it all.
Yes, that would be very cool to see because there's some council in charge of those, right?
Yeah. So, I mean, that to me feels like
yeah.
the logical
are
final
they making
place
another
for this
one?
To go. Oh, yes, they are.
Okay.
Absolutely, they are.
So
yeah, they're making a fourth.
Three made some money, is what you're saying.
It's made the most of them all.
Okay.
And that's rare for a movie like this to keep building.
Yeah.
You know, now he, because you say, and I don't know if it's just your joke, but you say you don't pay attention to these things, so you may not know this information, but
uh-huh.
I'm going to tell you, I don't know when they're going to make this movie, because you know what he's making next?
No.
He's making another Matrix movie.
What?
Yes.
I didn't know that.
Wachowskis are back, and they're making it, and him and Trinity, they're going to be in the movie.
Really?
Yes. So, I don't know. I'm not necessarily looking forward to that, but that's coming.
They're not relaunching The Matrix. They're like...
No, it's going to be a fourth film.
It's going to be a fourth film. They're not doing another trilogy.
I hope not.
Oh, man. Okay,
so, yeah.
Well, that's too bad.
Yeah.
I'm sorry
well,
to
you know,
hear that.
Maybe they'll fix things. I don't know. I mean, maybe John Wick has inspired them to come up with something new, but there is a confirmed... They're going to make a fourth Matrix movie. He has
okay.
signed on.
And
yes.
did you see the Cloud Atlas movie?
Didn't see it.
What?
I think my wife did.
Okay.
Because they lost me. Look, you know what? You want an endurance test. I've tried, I think, on four separate occasions to watch that Speed Racer movie. It's unwatchable.
I have seen the entire movie.
I get maybe 2 minutes further every time, and I've maybe made it to about 35 minutes. It is one of the worst movies I've ever seen, except for High School USA.
Yeah, I think, I don't know, I was kind of fascinated by Speed Racer.
Well, I thought visually I could get through it like, oh, that's enough. It wasn't.
It's definitely not enough. It's so terrible, but it's such a train wreck that it almost kind of fascinates me.
Yeah, I don't know. I just know that it is a movie that I've tried multiple times to watch. If I had seen it in the theater, obviously I would have, walked out and said I survived. Yeah, but I haven't been able to. And then so I'm just haven't been interested in a lot of the Wachowski offerings. Their promise from the early days of, I mean, they came out of the gate with Bound.
Which is fantastic,
Then The Matrix won, and it's been all downhill from there.
That is pretty much true, yeah.
Yeah. So they've now made more bad movies than they made good movies.
Well, wait, did you see that Jupiter Ascending?
No. Oh. I can't. These movies are, I don't even think my wife watched that. She loves sci-fi, but that just looked terrible.
Oh, wow. It is amazing.
Yeah, okay. Yeah. Amazing for the wrong reasons. Right?
For all the wrong reasons. It's like a cheesy 80s Clash of the Titans kind of movie.
Oh.
It's so poorly thought through. It's just, that my jaw was on the floor during that movie.
But you liked John Wick 3.
John Wick 3. And so one of the things I like about John Wick 3 is the violence.
I think that's the key for many, right? It's the violence.
It's the key for many. It's the violence, but it's John Wick does violence, particularly the third one, does it. There were a few moments in this movie where I closed my eyes.
Oh, well, I mean, the library scene was awesome.
Awesome.
There's a lot of bone punching and
there's like a knife in the eye at one point. Like, I had to close my and throughout the movie I was wincing. And I realized I was feeling every punch.
Yeah, it's like an operatic ballet.
It is, and I was going to compare this to musicals. What I look for in an action movie, particularly one with martial arts and with physical fights, not just gunfights, long, wide shots.
Yeah, so you know that it actually had to be worked out. It's not all editing.
It's the same thing. Watching John Wick 3, I was thinking about the make 'em laugh number.
From that movie, that new film that you finally saw.
That new film I finally saw.
Singing in the Rain.
But the make 'em laugh number is like, it's such a physical thing for the actor to do. And to do it with very few cuts and in these wide shots, you know that it's really happening. And
yeah, I think that's the key to the success, right, is the fact that you don't just see stunt doubles.
Exactly. You don't see stunt doubles. You don't see close-ups of something getting hit, which is clear. You know, they're actually doing this, and the camera's moving around them, and the shots are long. And these guys, there is a physicality to this. And you were talking about Los Angeles Overnight with them getting tired. Keanu Reeves at the end of this movie is exhausted. He can barely stand. And you see this in the fights, how tiring the fights are, even though it's still over the top and they're doing way more. But, you know, if you watch Ultimate Fighting or something, and you see like the athleticism of those guys, that comes across in this movie. And on top of that, I feel every punch because it's not being handed. The punches aren't being handed to me through editing, and I'm not being told feel this punch. But I see the actor really responding. But some of the other movies that I think do violence in this way really well are the Raid movies. And I know you didn't like the first one, right?
Well, I didn't finish. I just, I run out of time to watch these things. And I gave the first film like a half an hour. I had wanted to see it for years.
Yeah.
And there was something about it that I didn't like, and I just couldn't get through the raid. I just never got back to it. I've heard the Raid 2 is better, but
the Raid 2 is better, but the raid doesn't have much of a story or any character development, but some of the fight choreography is fantastic. It was a movie also where I winced and had to close my eyes a couple of times.
Oh, little Teal had to close his eyes.
Sometimes I just can't take it. But the thing is, I have really high tolerance for this kind of stuff. So if I'm wincing and closing my eyes, the movie's doing something right.
Well, you know, speaking of wincing, I winced recently, but for not the good reasons, bad reasons. I caught up with a film that I wanted to see anyway, and I almost saw it in the theater when it came out, but then the reviews were really mixed, and it's not that that turns me off of a movie. It just, with my limited time to get out to the theater, if it's mixed and I was on the fence, I'm going to stay home.
Yeah.
Then you saw the film. And I didn't get a chance to see it. And I said, well, I don't know if it's going to be worth it. So when it's available to see for free for me, or that, so it came on HBO, which I have. So I thought I would watch it, is the Steve McQueen directed film Widows.
Yeah. And we loved Hunger. We were talking about Hunger several episodes.
Yeah. And 12 Years a Slave is close to his masterpiece that you can get for a film, which I don't think you've seen.
So. I have not seen, but Widows...
Probably because you would wince too much in that movie, believe me. That's
I would. I mean, that's one of the reasons I've been avoiding seeing it, is I just, I need to be emotionally prepared to take on something like that.
But Widows is a departure for Steve McQueen and the kind of film that he typically does.
Yes.
And it's based actually on a British miniseries from, I don't know, years ago. And it was... co-written by himself and author Gillian Flynn,
which should tell us something.
Yeah, she is the person who wrote the book Gone Girl, which I did not like. And
did you read the book?
No.
Oh, okay, but
it's not my style of book. But I did not like the movie at all. And she also wrote Sharp Objects, which was this HBO miniseries that came out not this year, but it was like past summer. I thought it was terrible.
Okay. Yeah. And I haven't seen it.
I thought it was
horrible.
And
that's also based on her novel.
Yeah. And I felt like it was 8 episodes that could have easily been even just 1 2-hour movie. And there was nothing happened. And it was so obvious to me what the plot was, but it got very confusing because each episode you thought there'd be more clues to something else. But when the answer is so easy, there aren't going to be other clues because it keeps pointing you back. So why did we have to go through 8 episodes? I think it was just to try to get Amy Adams an Emmy or something. she's not bad in it. It's just it's not good. But my problem is that someone like Gillian Flynn, and you get this movie, Widows, which I really didn't know much about the plot, but it is so plot heavy with steps that are so, I'd say, obvious. I'm going to do some spoilers here. So if you haven't seen Widows,
don't.
I would just maybe, don't see it, don't. And maybe we'll convince you not to.
Yeah, I mean, I can't.
But I'm going to tell you some plot stuff just because I need to explain it.
I think it has to be explained because give us a little rundown of the movie first.
The first 5 minutes of the film is the setup. There is some sort of robbery, and it seems to have gone wrong. It's intercut with some previous moments with each wife and their husband, and then it flashes forward to this incident. So you get to see them in action, that they're all crooks. You don't know necessarily what each wife knows or doesn't know about their business.
Right.
You get a little taste of their personality. And Liam Neeson seems to be the head of the gang. And of course, if you've got Liam Neeson in your film, this Irish actor, you're going to cast him to play a tough Chicago guy.
Right.
Right.
Of course.
Because his accent is one of the great, great American accents in movie history.
Well, I would say he's only, as far as American accents go, he's really only beat by Colin Farrell, who's also in this movie.
Yes, playing a tough Chicago native.
Yes.
and Colin Farrell when used sparingly and in the right vehicles, he's okay. I did enjoy him in the Killing of a Sacred Deer, and I liked him in The Lobster. So Yorgos Lanthimos seems to know how to use him, but otherwise he's not my favorite, and he just seems miscast in this film. And he's not the only miscast person in this movie.
The whole movie feels miscast.
Yeah, and it's got a big cast. So everybody was attracted, I think, to the idea that Steve McQueen was going to direct something.
But
then what happens is the robbery goes horribly wrong, and they're all in this truck trying to get away. They're cornered. The cops open fire, and then the truck explodes. And now, of course, we have the title, Widows.
Right.
And they had stolen some money, and there's this political aspect. It kind of is a mix of, in a sense, The Wire and also this John Sayles movie, City on Fire.
Yeah.
It doesn't City of Hope, sorry.
Yeah.
It doesn't have enough of the chops to really do a good job with that story.
Right, but it sort of wants to be this kind of systems story, is what I call them, where it's dealing with a lot of different interconnected pieces in terms of how a political or a city system works, and that's what that City of Hope does. And also, John Sayles does that in several movies. Matewan is sort of like that. Lone Star is like that.
Did you do Sunshine State too? Yeah.
Yes.
Yep.
Yeah. And it's dealing with a lot of different pieces of story, kind of examining a social system. And this movie sort of wants to do that, but
and they may have done that more in the miniseries, right? So it's all very condensed and it doesn't really work.
Right. Cause it feels like these pieces actually aren't connecting very well. And so you have scenes that don't really move the story forward.
Yeah, because essentially, and again, I think we'll try to like condense is that, you know, obviously these criminals are dead. The wives now are trying to pick up the pieces of their lives, deal with the grief, but also and deal with the fact that their husbands were criminals. But now, of course, they stole money that got all burnt up in this crash from very important people who want their money back. And then they basically come to Viola Davis and say that they've got 30 days and they got to get all this money that can replace it or, you know, it's lights out. So there's the crux. The problem is that I'm a guy who has seen a movie called Raiders of the Lost Ark. And everybody who's ever seen that movie, you can fool me once, but we all know that when Marion gets loaded onto the truck and then the truck explodes, that Marion doesn't die.
Right.
And that first time I saw that movie, I was horrified that, oh no, Marion's dead. And then, of course, she didn't die because we did see something drop off the truck. It was a little bit of confusing. But not for one iota in this movie do I buy that these guys all burnt up in this in this crash. I know that somebody, and it's most likely Liam Neeson, survived and that they got the money or whatever. It was so poorly executed that I didn't even for a second, I was really focused on the fact that, oh, they didn't really die. Like, why would this truck blow up? Something else went on. It's pretty obvious to me. So when it's failed miserably, I might add, at that level, then every other breadcrumb.
Yeah, it fails on the pulp level. Right.
Yeah, and you know all of these things that are going to happen, and you figure out where Liam Neeson's hiding out way before.
Yes.
That becomes obvious. Now, in the midst of this film, there's a small portion of the movie where they have to start setting up a new caper that just because it's a caper movie at this point, it's kind of fun. And, you know, you like Viola Davis and Michelle Rodriguez, two of the widows, and the standout of the entire movie is the third widow, Elizabeth Debicki.
Yes.
She is a dynamite in this movie.
Yes.
She's Australian, by the way, but she does a fantastic American accent in this movie. And she's very compelling, her story and what she's going through. And the only problem is that they quickly go into this plot device where she's kind of becoming like a call girl.
Right.
And she meets this, you know, this very lonely businessman who happens to be an architect.
Right.
And of course, he can identify plans that not too far down the road, they're going to need his help. And it's just, oh, come on. And then there's another performance that comes into play. And she's great. She's an actress that just keeps showing up now. And she is fantastic as Cynthia Erivo. And she was in Bad Times at the El Royale, and she's going to be in Harriet, the Harriet Tubman movie that's coming out later this fall. And she is really great. So there's stuff.
She's their driver, right?
She becomes their driver, right.
Yeah.
And it's just, you know, when you are just a great actor or actress, there's something that you offer in the brief scenes that you're given. She's just dynamic and electric, yeah. And you just can't take your eyes off of her.
Exactly. She's very charismatic. She's also from England.
Yes. Then, of course, another person who's not American. There's no way, like, this place stays in Chicago, and half of the actors in this movie are not. Because then there's Daniel Kaluuya, who was in Get Out.
Right.
And he plays a very interesting bad guy. He is also English.
Right.
And then playing the mother of Elizabeth Debicki, who is Australian, is Jackie Weaver, who's also Australian. And she basically does is basically hired when you need some person to just chew up the scenery.
Yeah.
So, and she chews up more scenery than Robert Duvall.
And Robert Duvall chews scenery in this like you wouldn't believe, man.
This guy's almost 90 years old, and he's like, I'm just going to chew up some scenery.
Just comes in and he just does Robert Duvall. And it's just, I mean, I like Robert Duvall. I like watching him. It's a fun, over-the-top performance, but it has absolutely no reason to be in this movie.
A small point. But I mean, he eats up as much scenery as they give him in his brief scenes.
Yes.
And then it has one other great, in my opinion, great performance. And unfortunately, it's a small little character piece. And it's by an actor who used to show up in a lot of films in the 80s, sometimes in the 90s. He seems to be making a new comeback, probably from people that have always loved his work, but it's Kevin J. O'Connor.
Oh, yes, yeah.
And he's the guy who runs the bowling alley.
Yes.
He is awesome, and he's also shows up in the Hulu miniseries of Catch 22, and he's great in that.
Okay. Yeah,
To see him again. Yeah.
Yeah, he's got a really interesting face. Peggy Sue Got Married is where
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah. He was the bad guy, the bad boy. You know,
he was the bad boy who like was into Kerouac.
So that's the first time I ever saw Kevin O'Connor. And then he would do a lot of those kind of weird roles. Like he was in some Alan Rudolph movies, like The Moderns.
And Equinox.
Yeah. So, you know, it was great to see him. So you got this weird bag of like some good performances, some hammy performances. Then you have Steve McQueen kind of doing like these very intricate camera work that just doesn't seem to work in a film like this.
It doesn't fit the movie at all. The movie, it's like, you know, and we're talking a lot about the performances, but the performances are kind of all over the place. Like some of them are subtle, some of them are way over the top, some of them feel realistic, some of them feel kind of pulpy. And I feel like the movie just doesn't ever at any point come together. It's kind of all over the place.
It has a couple of moments here and there, but I walked away from this movie like really with a heavy thumbs down because.
Oh, me too.
There wasn't a single moment that I didn't see coming.
Yeah.
I wasn't surprised. I know there's some people might watch it and didn't hopefully hear us spoil it, and they might be surprised, but this just was like the wrong vehicle for Steve McQueen to direct.
It is the wrong vehicle. I think it's too pulpy for him. And he didn't quite know how to work the tone of the movie. And it's almost like he's trying to get more out of this movie than it has in it in terms of like, there's a scene early on when they're in a car and it's just this really long shot of these characters in this car and the camera kind of pans over to the street.
I know exactly what you're talking about. I know it was cool. It's a cool Will setup. Like he's trying to do something different, but it really wasn't necessary.
But it didn't fit at all. Exactly. And it's like he's trying to make some statement about how the town, the class stratification of the town or something, but it like just didn't translate. And
well, he's British and half of these other actors aren't from America. So he's doing a story set in Chicago and it feels like nobody involved in the movie really understands what being in Chicago is all about.
Exactly. It did not feel like it took place in Chicago.
Yeah. It was almost like it was like a play that was done in England about Chicago.
In so many ways it misses the mark and it's just bizarre to see this from Steve McQueen.
Yeah, and you know what? Eventually they do reveal that Liam Neeson is around, and they do it. It's not like at the last 5 seconds. It's a little bit before.
Yeah.
But I think, so there's this weird thing. There's this very strangely edited scene where we mentioned Kevin O'Connor, and he's the bowling alley. And there's a thing where he calls up Viola Davis to ask her about the notebook that has all the plans and whether or not she still has it. She said, you know, she got, you know, rid of it. And it, you could see that there's clearly somebody off screen that is there in the room with him wanting that information. And they never reveal that, but it was pretty clear that it's Liam Neeson. And he was checking to see whether or not she had it for the caper or not. And it's like scenes like that where, you know what, early on, reveal to the audience who's going to watch the movie that Liam Neeson is alive.
Right.
Give us that. That becomes now intriguing because we know he is, but the other characters don't. And do something with that.
And do some, yeah.
We already know what these plot points are going to happen.
And it's a pointless twist too. It doesn't. Nothing is gained by it. It doesn't. The twist that I always say is a twist that works is...
Yeah, I wish I could think of an example. You have an example of one that does?
I think The Sixth Sense works.
It does in a way that he never was able to duplicate that.
He could never duplicate it again. And the reason is because in The Sixth Sense, it's about a character realizing something. And so it's the fact that he's gone through all of this and suddenly he has to see it all differently. And so we're emotionally connected to the reveal.
Yeah. And I actually think that the problem is that M. Night probably wasn't even aware of himself how skillful he had done this job of playing with an audience expectations of following the perspective of a particular character.
Yeah.
We're always and realizing how he was manipulating our perception of what his experience was and not being able to take a step back and recognizing that, oh, he's a ghost.
Exactly. Yeah. But we're so into his point of view. That the twist works, I think, whereas this is just a plot twist. It's not about anything. It doesn't gauge us. I mean, I guess maybe the Viola Davis character, we're supposed to sympathize with her, connect with her emotionally over this reveal, but it didn't do that for me.
And I did like some of her, I liked her toughness and them having to crack it down and like do this thing. Like that part of the movie worked. Them having to come together and recognize that they got to pull this off. I like that part of the caper movie. That was cool.
Well, I like that part of any caper movie.
Yeah. Well, that's the thing. They did right. You're following that and you liked seeing what they were going to do. And again, I liked that. But again, I cannot recommend this movie.
Well, there's so many caper movies that are better than this.
Yeah.
In fact, we're going to do an episode on caper movies that are better than Widows.
Yeah, and you know what? I mean, this kills me, right? Because I just think that Steven McQueen is a real talent.
Yes.
And I liked his previous movies. I liked Shame. I liked 12 Years a Slave. And I liked Hunger. This film is just, it's just way off the mark.
It's a total misfire. Yeah. On multiple fronts.
But anyways, I think that's pretty much all we're going to have time for on this week's episode. I will, as another shout out, because you haven't seen this, but I want to really recommend it that you check it out, is, and I finally just caught up with it, it came out a few years ago, is J.C. Kandor's A Most Violent Year.
Yes. Yeah, you just told me about that the other day. And
the reason why I'm recommending it right here at the end is because on the hot heels of Widows, this is a film which you feel like you've seen this type of story before. It also is a system movie.
Okay.
But it tells a very fascinating aspect of the system. It goes into details. It really focuses on how hard it is to make the American dream come true and stay clean while doing it.
Okay, interesting.
And it's really great performance by Oscar Isaacs, Jessica Chastain, and Albert Brooks playing it like 100% straight and no humor whatsoever.
Oh, interesting. Well, he's done that before once or twice.
Well, and Drive.
Yeah.
But I mean, this is, it's just, there's a lot going on. And every time I felt that I knew exactly what was going to happen, it didn't quite go down that way. And so I appreciated that.
Okay. And yeah, that's... Unlike Widows.
And I appreciate the Sidney Lumet type of feel to the movie.
Oh, interesting. You know, that's a good point. Lumet could also do sort of systems movies.
Yeah, like Prince of the City.
Exactly, yeah.
You know, and with Network, right? There's like a system.
Yes.
In a sense. So he was really focused on like that type of thing where he was interested in what happens, the inner workings of government
right.
at a local level. So A Most Violent Year, it's a weird title. I think it off-puts people because they don't know what that means and it really means.
It makes you think the movie's going to be violent.
Well, but so the whole film, though, you were talking about this earlier with John Wick, like the wincing.
Right.
My stomach was tied up into knots because I was dreading. It creates a sense of dread throughout the movie.
Okay, right. So it's the threat of violence hanging over yes. it all the time.
Well, the title refers to it. This is not giving anything away. It's just so to set the stage. It takes place in New York City in 1981, which was for New York City one of their most violent years
right.
on record. So it's this idea of what's going on in this most violent year.
Oh, interesting. Okay.
Yeah. And that there's an experience, a threat of violence. This guy who's trying to expand his business and he's trying to make big sacrifices, but there's a lot of forces at play against him. And he's
right.
trying to maintain balance and not show fear when most people would cave into the pressures that are going on. I was floored by it. I thought it was fantastic.
Okay. I'll definitely be checking it out then.
Yeah. But in this episode, we've thrown out a whole bunch of stuff, the good, the bad, and the ugly. And so you can take your pick of what you want to watch. And the best part is a lot of these things are available.
Yes.
A lot of the things we mentioned are available on Prime or on HBO or like Netflix. So, you know, it's great if you have those services, you're good to go.
You're good to go. And if you happen to find some strange hidden gem on one of these services, let us know.
Yes, please send
please.
Us that. I mentioned this at the beginning of the show. feedback@jimandteal.com. Drop us a line, say, hey, you know, it'd be great if you could talk about a movie or have you seen this film or that film. And we'll be happy to try to take a look at it. Or at least I will. Because we know that you don't watch my recommendations.
No, I only watch things that nobody has recommended to me and I find in strange ways.
It is really weird about you. You won't. Hey, have you been watching, as we go, because this always happens, this is the 10-minute wrap-up. But
after the 20-minute intro.
Have you jumped into the new season of Mindhunter yet?
I am about halfway through it and I am really enjoying it.
Yeah.
In large
I want to
part,
talk about that when you get to the end. I do think we should talk about it.
Yeah, I think we should. And I think we should talk about David Fincher a little bit, too, at some point. But Mindhunter, I'm largely enjoying because of the performances.
Yes. It's a very performance-driven show. Yeah.
It is, yeah.
Yeah, it's not an action show.
It's not
psychological,
and
it does something way different than it did in the first season, which took me a long time to appreciate. But once you get to the end, you're saying, you know, that was different, but I enjoyed it.
Yeah.
So you'll see, because you really have to get the second half is really where I think all the stuff that's set up in the first half pay off as far as the experience.
Okay. Yeah, it feels like that's where it's headed. So.
Yeah. And of course, then there is BH 90210, the triumphant reboot. It's on this week. Only a couple more episodes left.
Have you watched more than the first
episode? I've watched them all.
Yes. Okay.
My wife is probably more of the true fan, but it's one of those things now, like, well, again, sometimes train wreck, you got to watch.
Yeah, well, I get it. And
it's terrible.
And I definitely get kind of, the bad TV thing. I think it can be kind of fun to watch junky TV.
Well, I'm preparing for the fall. Like, award season is coming, right? All the
yes.
good movies. So I got to get all this garbage out of the way.
That's what the end of summer and the beginning of fall, there's that little window of sort of garbage.
This is where we're at. Garbage time.
Yeah, it's garbage time. Okay, let's wrap it up for real.
All right. Well, I appreciate your time listening to the show, and I appreciate my partner Teal's time in talking about the movies. So, till the next time, go see some stuff.
Bye.
Bye-bye.